Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Yeah, we're back for another week. So there was no show last week because it was the bank holiday. And let me get this right. There's no show next week because of the bank holiday. But Mental Health Monday continues this week. And we're talking on a theme of the London Marathon, which took place yesterday. Well done to everybody who got involved in that and everybody who crossed the line, either with the help of a fellow runner or not. And well done for everybody who signed up, took part. Even if you didn't manage to go over the line, fair play for even thinking about doing it in the first place. It's more than I've ever achieved in my life. Coming up in a few moments' time, we'll speak to somebody who's been taking part in the London Marathon, but also featured in a BBC documentary, part two of which you can see later this week, Mind Over Marathon. We'll talk about the premise of it as well. But if there's a mental health story that you want us to cover on the programme or on the podcast, if you're listening via that, you can drop me an email, tell me about yourself and maybe why you want to get involved in the programme through mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. Mental Health Monday is about talking about mental health matters in an open and honest way every Monday, as I say, apart from the bank holiday. Right, joining me on this week's programme, I'm very pleased to say, is a guy who's got a really interesting story, but also it's a very timely one, given the fact that the London Marathon took place yesterday. Jake Tyler is his name, and he joins us on the phone. Jake, thank you for your time.
Yeah, welcome, Nick. Nice to talk to you. How's it going?
How are your legs today? How are you feeling?
Oh, legs are shoddy. I'm feeling brilliant, so I'm just kind of being very static and feeling quite good about myself.
That's a good place to start, isn't it? Your journey's been an interesting one, and your involvement in the marathon actually sort of almost runs concurrently to what you've been doing, because you've been up to all sorts, haven't you, in recent years and in recent months. People will associate the London Marathon with running, but let's just talk about your walking, because walking was one of the big things that you decided to do to try and shake things up from a mental health point of view.
It was, yeah. Well, last June, so nearly a year ago now, I decided to walk around Great Britain and hit all the national parks and all the places that have, you know, of natural beauty, to try and show people that, well, A, that it's a beautiful country, because I think a lot of people forget that, especially in the city, and B, how great it can be for your mental health. I mean, it was a kind of, I don't really know what happened. I think I basically had what you'd probably determine as a kind of meltdown, I suppose. And I had to resign my job, and I just got this idea when I was out walking the dog one day, and it made me feel so good just to be outside and be immersed in nature. You know, I could process my thoughts okay. I didn't have any stress around, and I just, the endorphins of walking and stuff as well, it made me feel so much better, and it wanted to make me, you know, it made me wonder, do people know it can be this easy?
Yeah, absolutely. You didn't have it all easy. Just tell us what happened in Dorset. You had to do a little bit of, is it co-steering, they call it? We have to whip around the side of the cliffs and in the sea. Bear in mind, this was a six-month journey and a couple of weeks in Dorset. What happens?
How do you know about that? you've dug around. Yeah, that was really embarrassing. I didn't actually want to tell anybody about that, but then I mentioned it in a video blog and I thought it was funny enough time had gone by. So, yeah, I got really excited that I was walking down this beach. It was the start of the South West Coast Path, which is the longest national trail in Great Britain. So I was just, the sun came out straight away. I was just feeling great. And I walked the length of the beach. And because the tide was out, my sense of adventure kicked in. And I decided that going around the cliff, like wading into the water and going around the cliff, would be an exciting thing to do. So I strapped my boots to my pack and went in bare feet. I got about probably 3/4 of a mile where the tide started coming in again, and I started to feel stupid and thought, right, okay, so probably go back onto the land. Got back onto the land, took my back off, and one of the boots had slipped off. So I spent the next 3 hours. I managed to go back to the beach and nick some goggles off a good Samaritan so I could go swimming and look for my other boot. Which I did for about 2 hours, Mick, and I couldn't find the thing. In fact, I found another boot that wasn't mine, that had obviously been there for a while. And I had to camp in my bare feet that night, 2 weeks into this walk around Great Britain, and walk to Swanage in bare feet the next day to buy new walking boots. So thanks for bringing that up.
It would have been great if you'd have run the marathon wearing those mismatching boots yesterday.
Yeah, no, I tell you what, I got sorted out from my trainer for the marathon. he got me some really good running shoes, and thank God he did, because anything else would have just been, you know, it was hard enough for them on anything else would have just been torture, I think.
You've got an interesting story, and you went on the walk as a result of a sort of a change in lifestyle that you decided to have based on the lifestyle that you were leading. So,
for
in your early 20s, I'm guessing there'd be a lot of people who were growing up thinking you had quite a cool life. So you're in your 20s, you were running bars and things like that. You were in Shoreditch, which is like a sort of hip and happening place in London. I guess there would have been people looking at you, Jake, at your age, thinking, Jake's, you know, he's got it absolutely going on at the moment. This is a guy who's got everything going for him. And you just didn't feel like that.
No, it didn't at all. I think a lot of it was mismanaged stress. I think that's something that I keep thinking about. That was a big contributor to my depression, and also being, you know, I lived with depression for a long time before that as well. You know, you can have the most amazing life in the world, and I was grateful for the life I had, and I was proud of the life I had, and I enjoyed it. But if you're someone who lives with depression and you have these days or weeks or months where you just can't get out of it, and it can be really, really hard. And in an environment where there's a lot of stress and you have to manage every single minute of the day, it's a very unpredictable lifestyle and an unpredictable way to make a living. And of course, what have you got around you to take the edge off? There's alcohol there. And you drink alcohol to take the edge off, and then you become kind of reliant on it. And then you wake up hungover and you eat bad food the next day. And, you know, you don't give yourself any time to really relax. And I guess I just kind of burnt myself out after a while, and didn't listen to what my brain or my body was telling me for a really long time. But I think also as well, as you know, there's a lot of pressure to be, you know, when you're running bars and stuff, you're the face of the business, and there's a lot of pressure for you to, you know, be the life and soul, and you know. It's a lot of pressure, and obviously for someone who lives with depression, who's keeping it a secret, which I was, you know, if I didn't, people would think I'd flake out of occasions a lot of the time because I just couldn't be bothered, and in reality it was because I couldn't face it, you know, and with no one to talk to and no release valve and no sanctuary, you're going to burn out, and I had to find out the hard way, and it wasn't until I was running this place in Shoreditch up until about a year ago that I realised I was in such a bad way that I was starting to sort of fear for what I might do to myself, you know, and that's when I had to reach out, and that's when, you know, that's when it starts getting really serious and a change has to be made for sure.
Did you feel at that point, as I say, you were running bars and you were running these sort of like these nights, and people would have known you as like, oh, Jake, you know, he's the guy who runs the bar and he's the guy who's, you know, always the life and soul of the party. Did you feel like that was a failure on your part? Did you think, oh, what are people going to think now? Or did you just think, you know what, that's it, I need to change these circumstances?
Probably a bit of that, yeah. I mean, no one, everyone's got kind of idea in their head about what their public perception of themselves is, I think, a good one and a bad one, probably. And my good one was yeah, I mean, not life and soul, maybe, but definitely present, and definitely, you know, I laugh a lot, and I maintain my friendships, and you know, I'm there for people a lot of the time, and I don't know, yeah, it's just, you don't want that image of yourself to be compromised in any way, I think. Well, I mean, me personally, I didn't, and I did feel like a failure, yeah, and worse than a, you know, professional failure. I felt like a, you know, like I was letting people down, and like I was being this completely fake person around people who I've known for years, and that's a horrible feeling, and there's no way you can have thoughts like that and not feel incredibly lonely as a result.
Jake Tyler's with us on Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk, talking about his story. He completed the London Marathon yesterday. What time did you get, by the way, Jake?
I did it in 5:56. However, I think I would have been happy if I did it in 8. You
know, hey, fair play. No, absolutely.
Right from the start, it's our first marathon, and our trainer drummed it into us, look, just you're there, you're like, the victory is being on the start line, just be there and enjoy the day, and if you get to the end, it's a bonus. If you do it in a good time, it's a bonus. You just need to get there and you've won. And he instilled that mentality in us from really early on. So, you know, me and my friend Poppy, we ran some, we walked some, we stopped and talked to people, we really absorbed the, you know, the atmosphere of the day, and I wouldn't have done it any other way. So I did it in 5:56, if you want some data, but... it wasn't about the time for me.
Now, in terms of the walk itself, that you did the 6 months of walking, so were you walking on any one day the equivalent of a marathon? So you were aware of the distance, if you like?
Yes, there was one or two days where I did about a marathon, just walking. But I mean, yeah, maybe that's why I enjoyed yesterday so much, because I've treated the marathon yesterday very much like I'd treat one of my walks, you know, on a kind of more extreme scale. You know, if I was walking, I'd set off first thing in the morning and I'd stop somewhere for lunch, and if I saw anyone I'd speak to them. If I walked past somewhere particularly nice, I'd stop and read my book, or, you know, I just completely take my time. I never put myself under any pressure, and that's probably why it did so much good for me, you know, apart from being outside and exercising and meeting people, all these great things that can make you feel good about yourself. I just didn't put myself under any pressure, and I've learned to kind of take that from the walk, and I'm trying to introduce it into, you know, sort of everyday life for myself now, and just try not to put too much pressure under myself.
But I was going to say, because some of the language that you've used there about happy, excited, and those sorts of things, there'll be a lot of people who are maybe listening to this who currently suffer with depression will have experienced maybe the feelings that you had earlier on in your life, even up to a year ago. Or actually, it's not that you feel down and sad all the time. You feel hollow. You feel little. You don't feel anything at all. And I wonder whether or not, you know, you can maybe quantify that for us. How do you feel different? Or is it a case of simply having the feelings again?
I think a lot of it comes down to how you perceive your feelings to be. And accepting that certain things are just going to be a part of you. I've painted quite a bleak picture of how my life was before the walk. But in fact, I did enjoy my life. I did have a great life. It was just, I mean, I wouldn't even go as far as to say it was tainted. There was just some really, really dark days, and I just didn't know how to deal with them. I didn't know how to manage them. And then as a result of that, I kind of, you know, chip away at my own self-esteem or what have you. But yeah, you're totally right. The feeling of emptiness and hollowness is the main thing. I think people think depression's all about being sad. Well, people who don't understand it think it's just being sad all the time, and it's not. It's all kinds of things. It's guilt. It's nothing. It's, you know, it's fear. You know, and they're mostly completely irrational things.
Jake's on social media, by the way. The Black Dog Walks on Instagram, but Black Dog Walks 1 as well. We'll get a link to that on our social media so people can follow you and see some of the things that you're doing on your journey. One of which, I must say, is by royal appointment, because you and Harry, Prince Harry to everybody else, you're like good mates now. He's become quite the voice, hasn't he, of mental health matters in recent weeks alongside William and Kate. But you've had a good chat with him about mental health and young men.
I mean, what an honour. What an honour to meet them, especially at this time when they're talking about something so important, and when, you know, they're using their influence to do something so positive and something that so many people can relate to. I wouldn't have been able to meet them if it wasn't for the documentary that I've been working on, of course. But, I mean, yeah, they're absolutely amazing. I know the picture you're thinking of me and Harry, it's quite misleading. We do look like pretty good mates in that, I've got to say.
Oh, but just to describe it.
I've only met the guy twice.
You're both smiling. You've got your arms around each other, but right up at the neck level, and then you're doing that thing where you're wrapping your hand across his stomach in a we're best mates and have been best mates for quite some time.
Oh, well, we connected. I was lucky enough to have some one-on-one time with him, and we really connected on a few things. And he's such a normal bloke, you know. I don't think he feels, you know, he's not exactly in line for anything, is he? He's kind of, he'd probably hate me saying this, but he's kind of a spare, isn't he? But he understands that he's got this status and he's using it for something so positive. And on top of that, he's incredibly passionate about mental health, obviously being a forces man. And quite opinionated as well, and it was really refreshing how opinionated. You know, we were talking about PTSD, and he kind of sat back and was like, I really don't like that expression. It should be PTS. Calling it a disorder is, you know, it puts someone in a box. And it was really interesting to hear him talk like that, because it was like, yeah, you're not just doing a royal duty here. You actually care about this stuff, and you're willing to talk about how you feel about it and share your experiences. And the Duke of Cambridge has been exactly the same, and the Duchess of Cambridge as well. They've all been so, so open about how they feel and what resonates with them. It's brilliant. You know, they're not tied into, well, they don't have this attitude of like, you know, the fusty old traditions of the monarchy. They're real people, you know. And it's so inspiring, and so, you know, I think it proves a lot of people wrong about the royal family. You know, it's made me really think that they're really, really great people, and they're doing something fantastic for the country.
Mind Over Marathon, part two of the documentary, which you can see part one on the iPlayer now, but part two is on Thursday. So presumably, have you filmed part of that this week, or have things been filmed for this week, which will essentially chart how the marathon itself goes?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I imagine the last part of the show will be the marathon itself. I feel really bad, really sorry for the producer who's got to squeeze, because each of us who ran had a runner with us filming us. So there's, you know, hours and hours and hours of footage from yesterday, from before we ran, during we ran, to after we ran, and he's got to sift through it all in the next few days and put a show together. So I feel really bad for him, but yeah, it's going to be an amazing show. I mean, I think we get a little preview of it tomorrow. We're all getting together in London, and a couple of the other runners, that their, you know, their story is going to be fleshed out a little more. There was a little more focus on Rianne, of course, who's, you know, the most incredible woman I've ever met, and but in Thursday's episode we get to see Poppy and Claudia, and yeah, it'll all come together at the end when we actually run the marathon. And it was an incredibly emotional day, and you know, it's going to make for really, really great TV. It's weird saying that, because I don't know, thinking about it now, it's just none of it at all. That the producers were just so respectful of all of us throughout this whole last 6 months. I mean, everyone is kind of damaged in some sort of way, for want of a better expression, but everyone's very strong and everyone's very willing to talk about what they want to talk about. But the producers never made us do anything we didn't. I mean, you could count the amount of times we were all together on one hand. There were times when people just couldn't face it and couldn't be on camera and couldn't, you know, just couldn't be part of the process. And the producers were always like, okay, that's fine. And so what's actually come out of it is an incredibly authentic TV show that really captures the essence of the group and the essence of what the whole point of it was all about. It's so real, and it's such, yeah, I mean, I watched it last Thursday with my best mate, and we were both in tears, you know, and it wasn't just because I know the people that are in it. It was just, it's so, it's such an important message, and it was so brilliantly done, and yeah, I've got a feeling Thursday is going to be even better.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll do your part in the story all the justice it deserves as well. And I just got to mention as well, finishing the London Marathon, that feeling. I've been lucky enough to stand on the corner at the mount so that I could see runners' faces as they get around and see the finishing line. And relief isn't even the word that I'd use. I don't even know what it is. It's just this sense that you could just go, oh, thank goodness, it's nearly over. Now, you managed to get through that yesterday. You said that you saw that sight. And, you know, the London Marathon's been organised for many, many decades now. When you did your 6 months walk around the country, you had a slightly less glamorous end, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
You decided to end your walk in Stoke. Was there something romantic about that? Was there something about Stoke? Was there a moment or something you just wanted to see in Stoke to walk through on the final day?
No, I just really, really like Stoke. No, it was so happened that my walk had to end there. I developed something called iliotibial band syndrome.
Oh, wow.
Which is it doesn't sound as bad as it. It's not as bad as it sounds. It's like an inflammation of a muscle that runs from your knee all the way to the top of your glute. But I had it on both sides, so there's no kind of relief from that sort of pain. You can't sit still. You can't walk, you can't do anything. Nothing, no amount of anything you do takes the pain away. So I was always going to stop for the winter anyway, because I'm not an endurance athlete. I'm not a camper. I'm just a regular person. And I think that's why what I did with the walk has resonated with sort of normal people. But I had to stop because I got this ITBS.
See, now I feel bad because I criticised not only you, but also I've criticised Stoke as well. So I've come away looking bad twice now.
Well, I'm from the south. I don't know what it's like around there. I didn't know there was this feud between Liverpool and Stoke. They're not too far away from each other, so I thought I'll just leave that one where it is.
I think, like, yeah, most people, they just have no consideration for Stoke at all. But no, absolutely, that's where your journey came to an end, so that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, I didn't just get bummed out because I was in Stoke and just, like, that's enough for now.
Jake, people can see on Thursday night, and it'll be available on the iPlayer to watch both parts of your and your colleague's journey, Mind Over Marathon, on the BBC. Huge congratulations. How do you feel in your own sort of mental well-being now? What do you think of the next 6 months to a year? Where do you think your journey's going to take you next?
Well, Stoke, to start with. I'm heading back.
It's going to start in Stoke, yeah.
Because this the show, filming for the show, ran for 6 months, and that's all coming to an end now, which is very sad. But it's also exciting because the next chapter is the start of the walk again. So I'll spend the next month planning for the next part of the walk, and then I'll be walking again for probably another 6 months. So should finish in November. And yeah, I just, again, not putting any pressure under myself, just get the thing organized, get out there and start walking. That's really exciting for me. That's all the plan needs to be to give me happiness, and I'm a very content person at the moment.
Brilliant stuff. Jake, thank you for coming on the programme today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mick. Thank you.
That's Jake Tyler, who completed the London Marathon just yesterday in the time of 5 hours and 56. Mind Over Marathon, available from the BBC iPlayer, but also on air on the 27th of April. Check your TV guide for local listings. Right, Radio City Talk, it's Mental Health Monday. Great to get Jake on the programme today. If you listen to this and you're thinking, oh, I've got a story similar to Jake's, you don't have to run a marathon, but if you've got a change in your life as a result of mental health, or you're doing something a little bit different as a result of what you've experienced, drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk, and if you want, you can come on and share your story here on Radio City Talk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk, and we could be speaking to you on a future edition of Mental Health Monday. Don't forget, the Radio City Talk website has got all the information about the show and the podcast that you can listen to, radiocitytalk.co.uk. If you thought today's show was helpful, all the previous episodes are available via the website and our Audio Boom page. You can also subscribe via iTunes. If you've done that, if you've liked it and you told your friends about it, even better, Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. My name's Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.